It's June 25th, 2014, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa, and though you can't see it, we are dancing here in the studio as well. First, we'll cover local and national science and tech stories. Then we'll hear about a couple of upcoming events from two news guests.
Yes, joining us today is Georgia Skinner from DBED to tell us about HVCA's panel called Getting to Know the Creatives. And then we have James Cave from The Offsetter to talk about the Top 8 Project.
Finally, we will talk to Matt Bickle and Huala Grevy about using open source software in business. Have your questions and thoughts ready to call in or tweet, but first, the headlines.
Researchers at the University of Hawaii at Manoa set out aboard the research vessel Falkor today to the Lo'ihi Seamount, located southeast of Hawaii Island. Attention has largely been focused on the summit of the underwater volcano, but this new mission will head for its base on the sea floor. There, scientists will study the unusual thick mats of iron oxidizing bacteria that have formed around the volcano, as well as collect water column samples. In addition to UH, participating institutions include the University of Minnesota, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, and the French Research Institute for the Exploitation of the Sea.
The expedition is part of the more than 100 days at sea that UH has earned aboard the cutting-edge ship, which is operated by the Schmidt Ocean Institute. The researchers will have access to the latest high-resolution imaging equipment, sonar systems, and chemical sensors. Mats made of iron oxidizing microbes are not uncommon at undersea hydrothermal vents, but around Lo'ihi, they can be more than a meter thick. The abundance of iron is important to the growth of microscopic organisms in the upper ocean, where they produce oxygen and form the base of marine food webs.
As a result, Lo'ihi may play a key role in supporting sea life in a large area of the Pacific and in maintaining the critical balance of iron and carbon cycling. And the researchers note that their research off Hawaii Island could have implications in the search for life beyond our planet. Lead scientist Brian Glazer, a UH associate professor of oceanography, said in a statement, "In accessing Lo'ihi, we have a window to the ancient Earth that also provides clues about the potential for life out there in habitats that could exist on places like Mars or Europa." You know, when you think about this bacteria that is sort of oxidizing iron, I mean, you know, iron oxide is rust, mm-hmm. and you need oxygen for that. And, you know, having this be an occurrence down there in this volcano, you know, at the bottom of the ocean is a pretty interesting chemical reaction.
These microbes just use iron as their energy source. They create rust in the process. And like they said, they're found everywhere around these vents under the sea, but around Lo'ihi, it is enormous. Mm-hmm. And because the iron is actually a basis for supporting microbial life, you know, they're saying, well, Lo'ihi is probably an important development for sea life in the Pacific overall. So it's definitely an important study. We talked about, of course, the Falkor ship, and it's great that UH has been able to get 100 days aboard it to do its research. One thing that was interesting is that they're using a new ROV to do this research because in the last mission, just last month, they were using the underwater ROV Nereus. We talked about mm-hmm. that vessel, mm-hmm. but it was lost in that expedition. So now they're using a new vessel, and now they're going to have to work even harder at developing the next generation.
You know, I just scheduled the folks over at Falkor to come on the show
Fantastic.
Later on in July. So I'm looking forward to that.
Hear how that goes.
Yeah.
The High Technology Development Corporation last week announced that its Innovate Hawaii program has awarded nearly $250,000 to four local companies as part of the Hawaii Small Business Innovation Research Matching Grant Program. The HTDC says that the Federal Small Business Innovation Research Program has already contributed $98 million to more than 100 companies, which in turn have brought more than $75 million in commercialization dollars to Hawaii.
The recipient companies are Oceanit, Pacific Rim Defense, TerraSys Technologies, and Kampachi Farms. Kampachi Farms and aquaculture fish firm in Kona received about $99,000 from the HTDC to bolster the $199,000 in grants from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Oh, and also TerraSys, which specializes in wireless interference and mitigation, received over $73,000 from the HEDC after winning grants from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Oceanit received $50,000 to support two Air Force awards, and Pacific Rim Defense received 25,000.
The state program was created in 1989 to encourage local participation in the federal program. And according to the HTDC, it is one of the few funding sources that support companies from concept to commercialization. The annual budget at the national level is about $2 billion. HTDC CEO Robbie Melton said in a statement, "We want to see more Hawaii companies take advantage of this funding source. HTDC's federal program, Innovate Hawaii, has resources that can help companies with grant writing and getting their products to market."
Well, you know, this is a program that that HTDC has been doing for the better part of, I don't know, the last decade.
Right, it used to be called the Manufacturing Extension Program, and now it's Innovate Hawaii, which, of course, sounds a lot more exciting.
Yeah, well, and then I think there is a push to encourage local companies to try to get involved because, I mean, this is federal money. They don't take any kind of equity stake, mm-hmm. you know, in your company, so if you are able to get it, and then HTDC, you know, helps to kind of sort of mentor the process along.
Right. They say, we act as your general practitioner. We help you get this business off the ground. And they provide in this program up to 50% of federal awards to match what you get in federal awards to get to phase two.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Great program.
And finally, on the national stage today brought Google's turn in the tech spotlight as it kicked off its annual I/O Developers Conference. The company showed off a colorful new design for all of its products as well as a new version of Android.
Google also introduced a low-cost Android One phone for developing markets and showed how Android could be displayed in in-car dashboards and on wearables. Android Fit was announced as a new platform for fitness wearables and apps that are designed to rival Apple's HealthKit system.
Now, you know, where I get my latest news is Google Plus, and I saw a posting there where a guy had a T-shirt on. And he said, "For $900, I got a cardboard thing and two watches."
Well, because Google I/O is famous for giving new gadgets to mm-hmm. people who come to the conference. That's why the tickets are so highly sought after. Sometimes you get a laptop, sometimes you get the brand new phone. And this time the cardboard was something called Google Cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it was one of their employees' 20% project where you can take your phone, fold up this piece of origami-like cardboard, put your phone in it, and it becomes a virtual reality headset. It's sort of like a cardboard Oculus Rift. So it's kind of cool, but yes, I can see that if you thought you were going to get a brand new laptop, the piece of cardboard probably isn't quite
as
exciting.
We had the Kai on to talk about the VR, you know, VR Hawaii, and he actually was creating something like that.
He wants to fabricate with 3D printing and probably slightly more refined materials than cardboard. But he has sort of the same idea, so it was kind of cool to see. But they also gave away watches, as you said,
mm-hmm.
and it's fascinating that since the days that people began to suspect that Apple was going to make a watch,
everybody
has a watch,
right.
Even though Apple has not ever said they're going to make
a watch.
So it's pretty awesome.
Well, now joining us is Georgia Skinner from DBED, and she's here to tell us about an upcoming HVCA, which stands for the Hawaii Venture Capital Association panel, and they're going to be doing something called Get to Know the Creatives. Welcome to the show, Georgia.
Thank you. Aloha. Great to be here.
Yeah, we always love to have you on, Georgia, and I know you are very much connected to this creative community, and we wanted to get your sort of take on who is on this panel and what's happening with this creative sort of ecosystem.
Yeah, it's very exciting. You know, we were talking earlier that I think when I first started this job at Creative Industries at DBED in 2007, people were not really warming up to the idea that there's this huge intersection between creative and tech. And of course, technology is immersive in everything that we do today. And now the creative economy is really a tangible thing. It's something that even organizations like HSDC are investing in, things like the GBS Transmedia Accelerator. And mm-hmm. David Cunningham will be one of our guests tomorrow at the HVCA wonderful Get to Know the Creatives event.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for our state, we have a huge concentration of creative people. So what folks will hear on the panel tomorrow is a cross-section of people from design, a little bit about, of course, GVS. I'll do an overview of where we've been and where we are and where we're going. And then, obviously, Kaka'ako Agora is a fantastic project, and it's great to see sort of Wei and her team really reinvent themselves all the time and keep at the cutting edge. We're fortunate to have them in our community because they really are kind of the eyes and ears of the arts community on a global level. scale, mm-hmm. especially with the eye towards Asia. So love what they do. And then James and I were just talking earlier about James Charisma and his incubator project. So that's INK for those of you that can't see anything here on the radio. But I'll tell you, the group, I think, will have a lot to share. And the value that the creative sectors bring to Hawaii is enormous. I was just reviewing our latest numbers, and there's over 48,000 people and small businesses in the state that are creative or tech focused in that intersection, right? Which includes your app developers as well as your designers and your music people and performing artists. But really what's happening now, and this whole notion of the high growth initiative and investment in the creative sectors, whether it's the transmedia accelerator or the idea that's been floating about for the fashion accelerator, I think you're seeing now that Hawaii, in addition to major states like Massachusetts and others in the United States, are really coming on board and we're coming into our own in this area. So I think tomorrow will be a really interesting dialogue. I look forward to seeing all of these people who have really, I think, done a lot to put Hawaii on the map in terms of the creative and technology ecosphere out there that's, you know, really moving and shaking in new ways every place.
And, of course, we've had you on the show in the past to talk about some of these projects, and you've been really overseeing and watching its evolution, and in terms of where we're going and where we've been, it's good because we talk a lot about diversification of our industries, and the creative industry is a significant one, and that was validated, I think, in the last legislative session, correct?
Yes, we were fortunate for our Creative Lab project, which is an immersive year-round program to accelerate creative content for export here in the state. So the legislature awarded us $100,000 to grow that program, and we're also pitched in with HSDC on a US EDA grant to grow it even further. So we have some big successes actually in Creative Lab. One of the projects just started filming in Korea. So we actually have someone who could not raise money, got their script fixed in Creative Lab, and secured funding, is now shooting it, and Chris Lee is part of that project
as well. That's great. I mean, I like the way that the sort of the creative industries has evolved. Maybe, you know, like maybe 5 to 7 years ago, it was primarily focused around the film and
music,
movie sort of industry, but now it's sort of encompassing a lot more of that.
I mean, like
fashion, all the way to fashion, as well as, you know, sort of these creative design spaces.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think collectively all of that, if you look at the GDP chart, it's pretty phenomenal. We're at 5.6% or $3.8 billion that the creative clusters, all of them collectively, contribute to our GDP. Mm-hmm. That's like in the top 10 of the GDPs in our GDP companies in the state.
Well, it sounds like
clusters, rather.
A great event. So where and when is it taking place, and how can someone get in on the action?
All right. Go to hvca.org. For those of you who haven't been there before, I seriously encourage you to check it out. It's a great hub of information. It starts at 11:30 tomorrow. And I know there's been a lot of activity, so log on now if you can and sign up. We'll start at 11:30. The lunch begins and panel begins at 12.
Sounds good. Thanks, Georgia, for joining us.
And it's at the Plaza Club. I forgot to mention that. Thank you so much.
Well, we'll definitely put it up on our show notes.
Absolutely.
And, of course, now joining us is that mystery James that Georgia mentioned. That's James Cave. And
hello.
He's here from the Offsetter to tell us about a cool project called Top 8.
Yeah. Hello. How's it going? I'm really looking forward to this luncheon myself because from somebody who wasn't invited to be on the panel. I'm excited to sit on the other side.
But
of
you're
the
immensely
table.
Creative.
Well, you know,
you'll be seeding questions.
Right.
I mean, James. You should.
Way is on the panel. And you know, you've been
and Toby's
quite,
on the panel.
Quite
so
involved
she'll
with the whole.
Too.
And James Charisma, also a buddy. Okay, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great discussion to be had for sure. So the top eight, Bert, I really want to thank you for being the guinea pig for the very first top eight in this new series on theoffsetter.com. I'm excited.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll keep it at that and we'll let people sort of go check it out once it gets published. But tell us, what exactly are you trying to achieve with this top eight?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to say it's not an original idea. In fact, I think every magazine and online website that covers anything has done something like this. So I'm basically just copying an idea.
It's holistical.
It kind of is. Yeah, it kind of is. And it's supposed to be, well, it's supposed to be like, you know, we have so many, as Georgia mentioned, we have so many creative, we have so much creative energy going on in the city now that it would be really cool, I thought, to pick the brains of the people who kind of are generating this creative energy from anywhere from like, you know, school students, high school, elementary school students, all the way up to career professionals, to even people who retired, to, you know, the whole gamut, and really pick out what are their top things, their top cultural things that have influenced them in some way, in, whether it be in their artwork or their technological innovation mm-hmm. or anything like that. But what has inspired them to be the person they are today? And it's kind of a daunting thing to think about it, right? I mean, you came up with 8 things, but it's hard to come up with that thing that
yeah,
sort of
when
defines
you. When,
you
when,
right?
Yeah, when you go through the process, I mean, you really sort of hone in on what is it that you're going to select that actually is perhaps reflective of you from a character standpoint, right? I mean, you don't want to just say, oh, I like the color blue. What goes behind that, the selection of the color blue? But I didn't choose any colors, but I did choose a couple of, you know, like TV shows and movies. And
yeah, I think you had a whole thing like Star Trek, of course, but then you mentioned the praying mantis as an insect that really inspires you. And I just think that's very illustrative of who you are, Bert, as a person. Because obviously, I mean, listening to your interest in the show on Bite Marks, we think, okay, yeah, of course he would love Star Trek, right? But then to learn to learn about your other interests and other things that have really shaped you, I think is enlightening. And I hope that it can carry on to, you know, all these other creative people who are doing so much awesome stuff that, you know, they can do this thing for the offseason.
Well, I would love to see, you know, Georgia's top 8 and Ryan's top 8.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm up for it.
That would be awesome.
I like how you're mixing it, though. It's not like your top 5 authors, which Bert could provide, or your top 5 songs, which mm-hmm. Bert could provide, or your top 5 favorite places to go on vacation. You can cross anything, but it is kind of like your 5 tokens or your 5 things that you think can kind of provide that mm-hmm. insight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, top 8 stuff. Yeah.
Your talismans, top 8, yes. You know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think – I mean, the idea – okay, so then there's the listing component, and then there's the, like, explanation of why the color blue has made you who you are sort of thing, which, you know, when you opened up to – can be 8 – top 8 anything, I mean, there's no limitations there. So mm-hmm. that's actually kind of hard, I think, for you to do. I was trying to do one for myself to send out as an example, and, I mean, it is tricky to do. And then on the other side, I'd like to have the participants sort of come up with a way to illustrate them in some way. Not all 8, right? Because this is like a lot of homework, I know. But, and all
well,
these guys, all these
you're
people.
Paying your contributor so handsomely.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Free, nothing, 90, nothing is yeah, what yeah. I'm trying. No, but to have them illustrate it, and it can be in any way they want to do it, whether they want to doodle something and, you know, send that as a text picture to me or a GIF or a YouTube video or anything. Mm-hmm. But I think to have that also sort of represent them as a creative person is kind of cool. So I'm looking forward to what turns out. I've sent out a mass email to some people who I thought would be kind of interested, and they are. They were at first they were really interested, and then I started telling them more about what was involved, and they're like, oh, okay, well, that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I think once it starts rolling out more and more, we published yours, Bert, today, by the way. So it's
it
up
did.
There.
It went
yeah.
out. Uh-huh.
It's up there right now. So if you can start seeing, once this starts taking shape, then maybe we'll get more people really interested in being
well,
part
I hope,
of it.
Well, I hope you gain some contributors as opposed to lose everyone that might have been interested.
Yeah, so, me too.
James, where can someone go to learn about the top 8?
Okay, so you just log on to theoffsetter.com, and it's Bert's is right there.
Okay, good.
He's smiling at you.
Yeah,
and we can volunteer.
And you can send me an email, james@theoffsetter.com. You can let me know that you're into doing it. Let me know it's the top 8. And
is there a deadline?
No deadline. No, I mean, we'll just keep this rolling out as long as it can go. And cool. Again, it's an experiment too. So we can see about how it's going to shape up, how it takes shape, and where it goes from here.
But, well, thanks. Sounds good. And, I'm looking forward to Georgia's and Ryan's and everybody else.
I've gathered you there. I'm sensing a hint here. But okay. Thanks, James, for joining us.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
Georgia as
and
well.
Georgia.
Thank you. It was great.
And that's what's been happening this week. We'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be joined by Matt Bickle and Hawala Grevy to talk about open source applications in business.
We are pretty sure that open source is establishing a foothold in businesses. But with payments and licensing changing across platforms, are they still a contender? Of course, we'd love your questions and thoughts as part of the conversation. You can give us a call at 941-3689, or if you're on the neighbor islands, you can reach us at 877-941-3689.
And of course, we're live, so you can tweet us your questions at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
My name is Tyree Jenkins. Being an underwriter, it's like a double blessing. First, I get to support my local public radio station, which is such a source of wonderful information and entertainment. But also, it's a great business decision. Hawaii Public Radio is one of the most listened to radio stations in Hawaii. The listeners are smart, and they're the type of people that I want to have as my patients.
Hawaii Public Radio, celebrating partnership, building community.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Robinson, author of Find Happiness Now. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about effective ways to bring more love, balance, and joy into your life.
Sunday morning at 11.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And joining us today is Matt Bickle and Hoala Grivi. Matt is a consultant and owner of Bickle Information Technologies, an IT services company.
Hoala, meanwhile, is a longtime open source advocate and local entrepreneur. He is currently the owner of Pow Spam and developer of the new Pow Box.
Oh, of course, and also DareShare.
Yeah. Wow. That's taking a sleep right now.
Oh, okay. Well, what are the key benefits realized in open source implementations? And, of course, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. And that number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Matt and Hoala, we want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Now, you know, I've been known to butcher people's intros and bios, so I want to give you guys a full chance to really articulate what it is that you guys do. I mean, Matt, we talked. I said Bickle Information Technologies, but what do you do?
Well, I had worked for it's about 24 years now in technology, and I've worked for pretty much medium companies, a couple small as a consultant as well. And through that time, mostly in management, director of IT, that kind of thing, mm-hmm, where I had a budget mm-hmm. for certain sets of software. And it was only X amount of dollars, and nobody ever wants to give everything that the IT guy thinks they should have. So I kind of got into open source through basically out of necessity. I had to find something that filled the gap, that worked for me, that was industrial strength, and didn't cost a whole lot. That was my first motivation. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Having gone out on my own, I saw just an opportunity with small and medium businesses and the challenges they have with running their business and then still providing all of the tools they need to run their business. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Mm-hmm. So, you were doing, I guess the abbreviated name is Bit Hawaii.
Right.
And it's basically a small IT consulting firm that kind of focuses on doing open source applications or suggesting applications for businesses to use.
Right, right. So my focus is really on providing the service behind the open source. Mm-hmm. Right now, it still takes a little bit with a lot of the different open source software from a technical aspect to be able to implement it, install it correctly, configure it, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So where I'm not, I don't make any money on licensing. I'm all on the service side. Mm-hmm. So
now, Hoala, the last time we had you on the show, you had an app you were building. It was called DareShare. It was trying to dare people to do interesting things. I do believe there's photographic evidence of licking Bert's
head. Tongue that was stuck
you
to
still
my
having
head.
Nightmares on that?
Yeah, I do.
But
I do.
Of course, in the startup world, things change quickly. Now, you've been in software development since you were in college, and you had and you've been continuing to develop a company and a program called Pow Spam, but it sounds like it's growing and you are launching a new venture.
Yeah, we in our strive to innovate and drive more revenue to the business, we stumbled upon this service. It's cloud-based, HIPAA-compliant file sharing. We're calling it Pow Box. We're generating revenue already, and I think we're really excited about this one.
And in terms of when people think of innovative companies, sometimes it's taking an idea that people understand rather than trying to create a new idea, something they can understand but iterate it in a useful and compelling way. So when you started to describe what PowBox is, HIPAA-compliant file sharing, it's almost to me like it's as cool and as simple as Dropbox, which we've talked about on the show. But a lot of people say, well, Dropbox, though, is not safe for confidential information, health information, sensitive information. So you're taking sort of that idea and making it so that it can be used for the highest level of of security required in business, which is health information.
Yeah, the HIPAA landscape is changing all the time. It was implemented in 1996, but even as last summer, there's new stringent requirements going into it. And I think we're early in the game on this. We're keeping our pulse on the market. You know, we're deriving new features directly based on what customers are telling us they want. And so, you know, we're excited about this this new landscape that HIPAA's providing for us.
But, of course, it is your talents and skills as a longtime geek and software developer that we're happy to have you on the show this week. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and experience with open source software?
Sure, Ryan. You know, when I first installed it in college, I realized I had this evangelical passion, similar to Bob Barker when he would tell his audience to get their pet spayed or neutered at the end of every show of The Price is Right. And I've since developed the same passion for Linux since installing it. It's in 1996. And to me, it just made sense. It made the right way to go as far as building a business, you know.
You know, I can really tell the passion thriving in your voice. It really kind of picked up a notch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's not just the coffee. Yeah.
Well, my own experience with open source was similar. It was playing with Linux. It was Red Hat and all the different variations that you had. But I will tell you, and we've discussed open source on this show before, I think that it was touched on earlier. It's not always the easiest thing to get into. One thing that people feel comfort, whether you're a business or a person, is that something that comes out of a box on a shelf back then or now from a corporation that you know and trust because they advertise so heavily is you install it, you click run, and it runs. Mm-hmm. And I remember staying up late at night trying to figure out what was wrong with my distribution of Red Hat that would not recognize a disk drive. And of course, if you're good at it, you can just say, oh, I flip these two toggles and everything works. But it did seem very intimidating. So tell me, is it still that frustrating that you still can see that need for the service level being the focus of your business?
Well, on the server side, on the back of house systems, yeah, pretty much. There's a lot of complication to that. But there's an awful lot of software now. Firefox, open source. The bulk of what's running on Android is open source, and you just pick up your phone and turn it on. There's things like LibreOffice, which is a Microsoft Office replacement. People can just go click on that, download, click install, and boom, they're done. They're using it. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely matured over the years, and now there's quite a bit that people can just use.
You know, we would probably be getting a lot of calls because you know, this is a topic that I think a lot of people are interested in, especially when you're talking about perhaps getting software that really works. I mean, the one that I am really enamored with is things like WordPress. I mean, you know, there's a whole ecosystem of developers out there that support WordPress. If you have a question about any open source applications that you might want to run by these experts, the number here is 941-3689 or from the neighbor islands at 1-877-941-3689. You know, we did have a call earlier that didn't want to it was kind of a shy caller, wanted to have his question asked. And basically, he wanted to start off with if there are any suggestions for open source tools like malware that people can start looking for or looking at.
Malware or stopping malware?
Oh, yeah, stopping malware.
Well, I might be looking to create malware too.
Yeah, well, maybe there's some open source that examples
too.
Of that.
Well, Matt, so if somebody wants to stop viruses on their computer, which is always a perennial problem, you don't have to go with Norton necessarily.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Probably the biggest one that that's open source is ClamAV.
How do you say that again?
ClamWinAV. Mm-hmm. That's an antivirus scanner. It's got plugins for all kinds of different systems, whether it's macOS or I think they even have an Android app now. So something like that would probably be the best just for virus scanning. For overall malware, as everybody knows with technology, you got to use, especially for security, a variety of different applications. And I'm not just open source. I try to be tech agnostic. It's if it plugs in and uses electricity, I'm interested in it.
And if it helps you get the job done.
Exactly, right. So so that's kind of where, you know, the open source fits in. And a lot of times it just fills the gaps. So you may have a combination of commercial and open source software. The Mac OS is a perfect example of that. Some of the guts underneath of OS X is open source, and then the other side of that is commercial. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely there's definitely a combination of the two. In the shops that I ran, and how I met Hawala was about, what, 10 years ago.
Yep.
And I was one of his first customers. And my rationale was, you know, here's a guy who is into open source as much as Bob Barker or whoever else, and as much as I am. And I could get really industrial strength, high quality, secure software and services. And then I had, on the other side of things, this flexibility of being able to, I could call Hawala up and say, hey, I've got this problem. Can you help me out? And he's not constrained by commercial software where we do things this way and only this way. And he's like, you know what? Give me a couple days. I'll get back to you. Calls me up. He says, I think I got it. Let's try it out. And I really appreciated and enjoyed that kind of collaboration and ability. And open source is at the base of all that.
So Hawala, 10 years ago, was that the PowSpam that you were working on? And back then, I mean, I think a lot of the open source applications really stemmed out of people getting connected to the internet, getting connected via or getting their servers connected, running, you know, Apache and all the different web services that the server would need. So there were a lot of talent that, like you, that needed to get into the businesses and help them set up their servers. Has open source moved from sort of the server software to more client-based applications?
Well, I think of some of the biggest trends right now. We're talking about cloud, we're talking about mobile, and we're talking about software as a service, SaaS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 81% of all smartphones run Android. Well, that's open source, so that's mobile. Cloud, you know, as an entrepreneur, if you want to build a SaaS platform and you're going to build it in the cloud nowadays, you know, it makes a business decision that you're going to build it on open source software, Linux, MySQL, Apache, standard stuff, yeah? And, you know, the software that runs the internet, it's not running on Windows. I mean, that's, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, maybe that was up for debate, but I think that's been put to bed. I mean, nobody in their right mind as an entrepreneur is going to, you know, try and scale something up with, you know, licensing fees and stability problems, scalability problems. I think the argument's been thoroughly put to bed about the power of open source, the business legitimacy of it. I mean, I just don't see any argument anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to some extent, I think with us, you might be preaching to the choir, but we would, of course, love to be challenged or to get questions. You can give us a call at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're talking to Hawala Grevy of PowSpam and PowBox, and Matt Bickle, who does Bickle Information Technology and IT Services Company. They're here to answer your questions. So, Matt, I will challenge you. I mean, I love open source, but they say that because anybody can review the code, it's more secure. Because it's transparent, it's more secure. But the biggest vulnerability in recent memory that involved hundreds, if not thousands, of the most popular and active websites in the world was the Heartbleed bug. And we covered it here on our show. And it was a very widely used, of course, we're going to use this OpenSSL implementation mm-hmm. because it's free and because we assume that it's secure. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that when everybody installed it, it had a very simple bug that allowed some leakage of memory on a server. So what do you say to someone who goes, wow, we were about to go open source, but that Heartbleed thing made my CEO's blood run cold, and we said, forget it. We're sticking with Microsoft for another 10 years.
Well, with anything, there's going to be exceptions to the general rule. But, you know, you bring up Microsoft, and you look, everybody knows about Patch Tuesday. Microsoft patches, you know, one thing or potentially hundreds of security issues every single Tuesday. So, you know, you take things with a grain of salt and things that get out in the media and get to be, you know, really blown up. Now, that is a significant issue. But again, these things happen with commercial software all the time, and it's closed source. And you never hear about
well,
a lot
Matt,
of things.
Well, but Matt, someone at Microsoft, several people at Microsoft's job is to identify, find, and patch those mm-hmm. things and release them every Tuesday. With Heartbleed, there wasn't a full-time employee of Heartbleed Incorporated, OpenSSL Incorporated, mm-hmm. to fix it or to keep track of it. So because although it was something where you said it's open source so anybody can audit it, if nobody is incentivized to do so, then you don't have that.
Yeah, and that is an issue with open source. And I think with what happened with Heartbleed, it's something that's now in the eye of everyone working on the security side of open source software. And, you know, they keep things like that in mind. And, you know, nothing's ever perfect and no system is. But you live and you learn. And with that one exception, I still stand by open source as being more secure and safer and more transparent than any commercial software.
Let's take a look at the Windows XP expiration. 91% of the country's banks, their ATMs run on a customized version of Windows XP. They're stopping support for Windows XP on a closed system software. What do those guys do? If it was open source, they'd have a lot more flexibility to maintain or at least keep on their own terms what they're going to do for their ATM software. And now Microsoft, or a commercial company for that matter, just says, no, we're making the rules and you're going to abide by it. And I think that's what people don't like about closed source software. You lose control.
So let me ask you this. So with the closed source, granted, it's Microsoft, but you can point to Microsoft. And if there is an outcry from the public that, you know, they need to continue to do something, maybe they will do it. But, you know, at least you can identify somebody. In the open source community, and I'm trying to understand, what is the self-correcting mechanism that gets the open source community to work on something that needs to be worked on when it's a little harder to point to one person or one company or one, you know, organization?
You know, I think with software developers and a lot of computer geeks, we tend to have our own egos. And I think there's a lot of ego battling that goes on in these development groups. So there is a lot of, I'm going to one-up the other guy. I'm going to find his issue, or I'm going to find the hole in the code. So it's a lot of the thing I've noticed about developers, and I'm not a developer. I'm more of an implementer. But I have noticed that they're extremely passionate. They're like musicians. And in some respects, you know, people always ask you, well, how do these open source companies or groups make money? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's not, yeah, there may be a company behind it that some does add-ons and makes their money that way. But I think the vast majority are doing it for the passion, for the challenge. So when it comes to things like patching holes, and, you know, it's a challenge. In some ways, it's more like a game, like, oh, well, I found this and you know, that's a badge of honor. And then mm-hmm. the next guy, you know, it's a lot of one-upping. And I think over the years, the quality of open source software in any given project has more rapidly increased compared to commercial software. Because with commercial software, the only incentive is making money.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of other incentives in the open source world to make things better.
You know, we're monitoring Twitter, and if you have a question, you can also contact us there. Russell Casignero also submitted a question, and he asked, with so many government RFPs and procurements requiring commercial off-the-shelf software, how can we make space for open-source software in government?
You know, that's an excellent question, because I've looked at some of those RFPs and I'm thinking, you know, I could do this. I could fulfill every requirements of this until I get to the we need you to work with HP or Dell. We need you to work with Microsoft. We need you to work with Cisco. And you know, that is it's a shame. And, you know, you see what happened with the government and the Affordable Care Act and the whole management of that IT system. Mm-hmm. And that's along those same lines. It's a very almost closed-minded approach to, we have to have things this way because we need somebody that we can point the finger at down the road, and that, you know, we can file a lawsuit if we need to, mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's not an outcome based on the positive side. It's almost an assumption of, when things go wrong, I need somebody to hold accountable, as opposed to, this is a better solution. And I, you know what, to answer the question, I have no idea. I have no idea how to crack that nut.
Well, it's something certainly that I think I'd want to explore more. I also want to get Huala's thoughts on that as well. But we'll hold that thought. We'll be back after this short break to continue our conversation with Matt Bickle and Huala Grevy about the business of open source.
And, of course, what are some examples of open source in the enterprise? And we'll get into some of the categories of that. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. And that number to call is 941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Or from the neighbor islands, you can call 1-877-941-3689. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Kuana Torres Kahele performs from his Music for the Hawaiian Islands series on Saturday, July 5th. HBR's Atherton Studio gives you an up-close and personal experience of this award-winning composer and vocalist. Reserve your seats now and get a sneak peek of his soon-to-be-released CD featuring Songs of Ni'iha. Call 955-8821 during business hours or go to hprtickets.org.
River runs warm in the summer sun.
Tom and Huck are part of America's DNA. This is Michael Lasser. Join me for fascinating rhythm and songs of and about Mark Twain's America.
Ooh, great. Sunday at 4 p.m. Run aground,
skipper gonna chase me with a big bloodhound. My heart twine.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. We're talking to Matt Bickle and Huala Grivi about open source in business and in government now.
And of course, that number to call if you have a question is 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And right before the break, we were getting into this pretty interesting conversation, and I think there's a lot longer answer that needs to be gotten. But, you know, in terms of government and the idea of perhaps government procurement having the open availability of suggesting or recommending open source solutions for applications that government wants to fulfill. Right now, and as we were discussing, I mean, it seems to be largely fulfilled by commercial, private sort of solutions. How do we get open source more into the government?
That's a great question, Russell, the guy who asked it, long time no see. You know, I think as a macro trend, as more and more software companies shift their models to a cloud-based software as a solution kind of service where the solutions provided over the internet, I'm hoping that these RFP requests, they're not going to care what it's running. They just want it to work, and they want somebody to call if it's not working or if they have a feature request. And I hope those type of RFP requests will naturally evolve into getting away from the name brands of the 20th century and going with the performance and reliability of cloud-based solutions of the 21st century.
And I think the good news is that we are seeing more and more adoption, or at least openness to open source in government work and government contracts. The White House has had hackathons and other events that are in that vein. And actually, there's sort of the ideal that people are saying is that if government itself produces software, if government is of the people and by the people, then by definition, something that the government produces itself is open source. So I think there's a natural link there that we can continue to nurture for sure.
Well, you know, and I think it also largely depends on who is, let's say, the CIO or the director of IT in any particular governmental agency. In the case of like the city government, and I don't want to speak for Mark Wong, but I think Mark has sort of adopted an open source philosophy and is looking for solutions based on open source applications. And the flexibility that sometimes open source offers is that he could go out and get, Matt, your company, to do something with open source solutions or others in the community, or he could perhaps get his own people to develop those applications internally. So I think that seems to be a trend that is sort of happening in city government. And maybe we'll have Mark come on and talk about, you know, open source from inside the city. We've got a couple of calls lined up. We've got James from Eva Beach calling in. Welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hello, hey, James. How you doing, guys?
How's it going?
All right. Say, do you know about Joomla?
Joomla,
yes.
What is your opinion on that? I've had it for I guess about 9 years or close to it, and most webmasters or whatever they ever get to come and help me with it, they always say, "Oh, you know, you should have WordPress or something else because I don't know too much about that." You know, and I want to know from you what you think about the reliability and the security of it.
Excellent
Great
question.
Question.
Matt?
Well, whether it's Joomla or Drupal or WordPress, the thing is you have to work with your developer on what they know. So all of those are great products. It's just that you kind of have to, it's like the type of car you drive or what your mechanic's a specialist in. So if you've had that in place and it's working for you and you are able to manage your content through there easily, it's still an active project and it's, I don't see any problem as long as you're working with somebody who can get under the hood and work on it. If you can't find that, then, when the car breaks down, you're out of a mechanic, right?
Well, are you?
Yeah, there seems to be, James, to answer your question, there seems to be a lot more eyeballs on WordPress. It's by far and large the leader of the race right now. Joomla was popular about 6 or 8 years ago. One of the things I noticed with Joomla was it didn't have a secure method of uploading files and content to the content management system. I don't know if they've fixed it since then, but they only supported FTP, which is unencrypted file transfer. So, that's one of the things I didn't enjoy about Joomla. And there are plugins for WordPress that do address that. And it seems to be easier to use, probably because there's more people developing on it.
Yeah, if you're going to manage it yourself, I'd suggest moving over to WordPress because that's a lot more user-friendly. The Joomla and Drupal and some of the other ones are much more tech-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. I think they're all active projects,
right.
And they've.
You know, I'm kind of curious, Matt, why you think let's say Joomla and Drupal remain tech heavy. I mean, WordPress has a very strong technical base, but something sort of changed that allowed a lot more people to get involved. Was it the fact that people could do themes? They could, they could commercialize the look and feel of WordPress much more easily because, that's kind of the business that they were in. I mean, what really directed WordPress to be more commercial?
I think the ease of use. It's the same thing with the Mac. And I mean, I'm an old DOS and Novell, and I monkeyed around with CPM as a kid. And it's the same old thing. Once something gets that easy interface and that ease of use on top of the power behind it, then that's when it explodes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely Joomla and Drupal will do a lot of what WordPress does, but it takes you 5 more steps and you need to know 5 more things to do it.
And I can say I've deployed Joomla and Drupal sites as well as WordPress sites, and I am one of those that have shifted to WordPress. And it is, one, a matter of complexity and user friendliness, but I agree with what you had said on the outset, which is there are more people right now in the world that speak WordPress. It's not like Joomla is a dead language, but your ability to find a resource that can help you when you get stuck,
right,
is so much greater on the WordPress side. I had a question for you, Matt, because this is something we're facing at my office where I work. We're evaluating open source as well as free software like Google Docs, but open source, the new Docs replacement, for example, or the Word replacement, because we just do very basic documents. But we're also being approached by Microsoft representatives who say, hey, gone are the days of spending, $700 on a full Office Suite license per workstation. Mm-hmm. We just want $9.95 per month per user, easy as pie, no obligation, no boxed software, includes the support. And I have to tell you, a lot of IT people say that without that, $800 to $900 upfront price tag, they're perfectly willing to say that just a small monthly amount per user is attractive. Does that make it harder to sell the benefits of open source? Because now you're not dealing with the Photoshop that costs, $1,800 to get the full package?
Right. No, I don't think so. I think you always have people who have that comfort level with Microsoft or whatever it is that they've used for years. But, I mean, when something's free, something's free. And at least for my business, I'm providing the service, and I'm providing the help when things break. So if you've paid $9 for something that breaks, or you've paid nothing for something, I have a preference. But again, when the support comes in and when your systems are running, the systems have to run smoothly. They have to be thoughtless, and people just have to do what it is that they do. And I've just found that when you put open source technology underneath things and it's just installed and managed properly, that even if big commercial software is cheaper, you can still provide a better user experience overall just from a an implementation and consulting point of view. So from a company, you really got to make the decision yourself. Who do I have on staff? Who am I willing to pay? What's my budget? Who do I work with that uses other software? That's getting less and less of an issue now with compatibility and all that. So
you know, this is great, and we've got a couple callers lined up, but we want to welcome Tim from Honolulu to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hey guys, this is Tim Dick calling. How you doing?
Hey. TD, what's up?
Woohoo! Well, you must know, Tim.
Hey, I'm a big fan of open source software, as I think you guys all know. And I wanted to ask a question that was kind of related to the ACA. How does open source software relate to things like HIPAA and implementations in that realm? And what's out there? And I'll take my call off the air because I'm driving and I'm not supposed to be calling you.
Oh, right.
Be safe.
Tim. Well, you know, I think Koala is just really sort of keyed up and is ready to answer that question.
You know, well, great question, TD. Thanks a lot for that. you know, with this evolving landscape between HIPAA, you know, the innovative companies, they're going to need to comply to new regulations that come out. They're going to need to bump up their encryption standards. They're going to need to rapidly evolve what they can do and what kind of response times they're going to include on this. And, you know, I just don't see any other way to build a business if you have those dynamic and high-risk scope features that you need to build using closed-source software. I mean, I just don't see any kind of fit for that. I'll give you an example that everyone in the room can relate to. You know, when Facebook had between 500 million and 1 billion users, the number one complaint was, damn, Facebook's too slow. So what they do, they took an open source component, Memcached, which sits anyway, it's a way to speed up your web application. They hacked it because it's open source. They had access to the code, and they built this huge open source Memcached implementation of it. And now, you know, does anyone say Facebook's slow anymore? No, they fixed it, and they used open source software to do it. And I think in a HIPAA-compliant environment, you're going to need tools like that that you can get the source code to implement, tweak, and throw it out there to meet the needs of an evolving landscape.
To be agile, it seems like,
yes,
having that source code,
you
gotta
access. You got to have access to that kind of stuff.
That's a great point. And you know, what I kind of wonder, and I want to hear you, let's say, comment on this, is the culture of whoever manages that project, does that have to change? Because in an environment where traditionally you had one organization or one company, one person to choke to get your project done, and now with an open source solution, is it a different sort of management culture in order to find this, you know, this open source application, make it scale, make it work in the way that it should work? And in the case of the, let's say, the Health Connector or whatever, you know, would that same kind of solution be found if you manage it the same way that perhaps traditional software gets delivered?
Well, that's a great question, Bert. Let's take a look at MySQL, one of the most popular database solutions on the planet right now. You know, who owns it? Oracle owns MySQL. Has anyone noticed any change in the stability, quality, or performance of it? No, because they were smart enough to keep the volunteer team intact and offer a commercial version of MySQL, which, by the way, I don't know anyone who uses it. But anyway, so there is a community-based open source software solution that a commercial company bought and owns, and it still works the same. No one's complaining about it.
Because they're not messing.
So there is a model. Yeah, there is a model for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. You know, we've got a caller patiently waiting, Paige from Maui. We want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Yeah, I'm a user of both GIMP and Photoshop, and probably in response to the GIMP success as an open source platform, they've offered all their products together on Creative Cloud, and I have a student, so I bought a year's worth of subscription from Creative Cloud, which includes Photoshop, Flash, and everything they have for only $19.
And so you have a question regarding one choice versus another?
No, it was just in response to how Microsoft changed their marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
that Adobe has taken the same steps, because I think from the pressure from the open source market, you know.
Okay,
right.
Well, thanks, Paige. Matt, you have any comments about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, Adobe's got kind of, they do have some unique software that's really hard to match up. And there's not an open source solution for every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hawala and I talk about Microsoft Outlook a lot between, you know, he never wants to use it. And I say, well, you have to use it. And or I have to use it in what I do. But there's, you know, there's certain features that you may get in one thing that you have to use because that's just the nature of your business. And Adobe's got that. And he had mentioned the GIMP, and that is that's the GNU information or image management program. And it's basically a Photoshop replacement, and it is awesome. And we were talking earlier about Google had actually designed their logo using the GIMP and not something like Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely software that's out there that can replace it. But when there's not, then yeah, you know, you are limited to commercial, but the open source has put the pressure, like he was saying, on the commercial side to drive the prices down, which is a good thing.
Voila.
Cloud, mobile, SaaS, it's all being driven by open source solutions, and these commercial guys are just playing catch up. And I don't see any change in that trend.
Hmm. So if you are excited by that, if you're a local business and you want to make that step, what would your recommendation be, Huala?
Go get an account on Amazon Web Services. You get about a year for free if you play around
just
with it.
Just for signing up.
Yeah.
And Matt, in addition to just simply calling you up, certainly, what other resources would you direct people to take that first step into open source?
Definitely call me up, but I got a second to Amazon Web Services. You can spin up virtual boxes of whatever you want. But check out SourceForge, www.sourceforge.net.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big original places for open source software. And they have listings of all the software and what it does and how many people have downloaded it.
Yeah, you can search for a specific solution.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like we've talked about ticket and event management. We've talked about attendance in schools. There's an app that's open source for almost everything.
Right, exactly.
Is there any group that you guys are affiliated with that perhaps gets people talking about open source solutions and, you know, others that are interested can join up and get more.
You know, Hawala and I go to lunch frequently, and anybody's welcome to join us.
Maybe you guys ought to start up a little
maybe we should start one
group or something.
I think that's what we've got the making of. If somebody wants to find information on your company, Matt, where can they go?
www.bithawaii.com.
And Hawala?
Powbox.com. P as in Paul, A as in Apple, U as in U-turn.
As in done.
Powbox.com.
Well, you know, you guys are great, and we really appreciate your guys coming on because this is a great topic that I think a lot of our listeners are interested in. Matt Bickle runs Bickle Information Technology, and of course, Hawala Grevy heads up PowSpam and PowBox, and he's a great advocate for open source. And we want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about innovative use of geolocation apps.
And if you missed any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, you can email us at feedback@bitemarkscafe.org. And of course, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Bite Marks.
And you can please follow me at Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chong, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And we leave you with our song pick of this week. It's a band called Cloud Control and a song called The Smoke, The Feeling. See you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.